The old saying goes, when you're good at your job, you get to write your own ticket. The career path to becoming a rock star sales engineer isn't always a straight line or even a predictable path. Our special guest today, David Stevens, shares his unique experience in MacGyvering his career. He will discuss how he DIY'd from a technical marketing engineer to a sales engineer to now being a global chief technology evangelist on today's episode of Sales Burrito. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! Your podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs, with your hosts Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the next episode of Sales Burrito. As always, I'm Dave Siles, and looking just as fine as he was last week, but a year older, my co-host Enrique Barreto.
Please do not say to our audience how old I am. I don't think you know, but it's okay. It's my birthday month.
Yeah, it is your birthday month.
I am celebrating every weekend. I'm celebrating that I'm alive, that I've gotten to this point, and that I have the pleasure of introducing into this episode of MacGyvering Things to the one and only David Stevens. How are you doing, my friend?
Good, good, good. How are you guys doing today? And happy birthday.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. And, you know, I wish you could say that it's like dog years, but no, it's not.
Yeah, hey, I'm probably not far in front of you.
Yeah, that's true. It was your birthday month this month too, wasn't it, my friend?
No. Mine was back in July. July.
See, time flies when you're having fun. Or time flies when you're driving a McLaren, maybe.
Whoa. And if you follow me on Twitter at TechieHand, you will probably see a picture of a slender me. I'll leave it like that. Just you can look at the picture of such a fine automobile as is a McLaren.
Well, Dave, thanks for joining us today. You know, it's always great to have a former colleague of ours join us. And, you know, Enrique and I, we both work with Dave in the past, and Dave's got one of the more unique career experiences, you know, for people that have gone through, you know, almost every side of an organization, from pre-sales, post-sales, technical marketing side. And, you know, it's just great to have you here. And, you know, I think it's really well appropriate for the time and the people looking at careers and how they're changing careers, really just kind of understand that, you know, it is not a straight path from, you know, always being, you know, out of school and the inside sales engineering into the sales engineering world. You know, you can come up any different way. And yeah, I think your story is going to resonate quite well today. But maybe we start, Dave, by just having you kind of give us a little bit of background, you know, where you first got your first cut into technology, you know, where you started your career.
Yeah, no problem. And thanks for having me on, guys. Really, really appreciate this. Yeah, my career is long and varied, let's put it that way. So I really cut my teeth as a junior sysadmin, working at a university, taking care of the CTO's office, actually. One of my first jobs, not even graduating from college yet, but after graduating, became my full-time job. And from there, you know, came up through the ranks, cutting my teeth on, you know, Ethernet cables and networking and you know, gear that was larger and heavier than anything we have today.
Oh boy!
So from there, you know, moved into the whole IT world proper. Was managing and learning how to do Windows sysadmin. At the time, you know, Linux wasn't even a thing at that point. It was either Unix or VAX even before that. So old technology back then that I got to play with, and I'm so glad that those days are behind us. There's some value and a lot of lessons to learn from playing with that technology, but I'm glad we are where we are today. So yeah, once I finished being an IT guy, really was looking forward for the next move. Just had a random conversation with a buddy of mine. You know, I started really getting into technology with some friends around the storage world. So, you know, I cut my teeth on iSCSI storage before it was even sexy. A lot of folks are like, why do you want to play with that stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, it can't go any faster than an Ethernet speed, and you really can't get those speeds out of it. I was like, look, you know what? We don't have the money to cut into fiber channel. You know, granted, yes, it's fast. It's a proven technology, but we're going with something new. And that was really my way into being a technical marketing person. I was talking to a buddy of mine who was working for Dell at the time, who ended up buying Equalogic storage, which is what we were using. And from there, it ballooned into a tech marketing role. And then from there, really enjoyed what I was doing. And, you know, I was kind of doing multiple roles at the same time. I was being a technical marketing engineer who was, you know, creating collateral, doing videos, writing documentation. And then from there, I went off and moved into another startup, or moved into my first startup at that point, which you guys are well familiar with. And I was, at the time, I was always asked when I was at Dell, you'd make a great systems engineer. You know, one of the things I saw a lot from my side was systems engineers and sales folks, actually more sales executives, account execs, more than there were systems engineers, were kind of a dime a dozen. And, you know, depending on what was going on and how well the money was coming in for that quarter, you may not be around the next quarter. Mm-hmm. And so I was always hesitant, hey, to stay where my specialty is, where I feel really comfortable. And when I moved over to Data Gravity, which is where we all yep. met each other, it was the next progression was to move up the ladder, and that was to become a systems engineer. And so I've just kind of parlayed all of my knowledge from being a little systems admin guy to you know, a regular corporate admin up into tech marketing to become a sales engineer. That's really how I got where I am.
What I like about your story, which is different than our stories, but very similar to our stories, is that if there's one thing that our audience have seen through the different episodes, is there's no shortcuts. You start from the bottom and you're going, every little thing that you do, it equates to what you become in the future, right? And I think that there's, you know, there's sometimes a perspective that, yeah, you could take a shortcut with a certification, or you could take a course, but you have to, you can go to school as many times as you want to go to school, but you need that street smart agility that that a sales engineer such as you have, right? That enables you to become more into your career. Now, let me ask you this, because I see this in a lot of organizations, right? What do you think, in your personal opinion, the differences are between, you know, the title, right? The title of a technical sales engineer, or a technical marketing sales engineer, or a technical marketing engineer, to just a sales engineer?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, from a technical marketing standpoint, you are kind of doing some pre-sales work on a day-to-day basis, but you're not necessarily in the field. You're not the one who's working on trying to bring in revenue. You're merely being the, you know, in my career, I was the go-between, the pre-sales and the inside sales folks who were out in the field talking to folks, and engineering. I had a direct line to engineering. I could literally walk around a corner and go ask an engineer, how does this particular feature work, or how does it not work? And so a technical marketing engineer has that unique inside avenue to talk to the engineering team. Whereas a sales engineer, depending on the size of the organization, you know, at Data Gravity, it was fairly easy to be able to have direct access to the sales or to engineering, but it wasn't always the case. And so I really find that that's the big difference between what a technical marketing engineer does and what a sales engineer does. And a sales engineer is not really in charge of creating collateral, so white papers or data sheets or anything like that.
Yeah, David, that's a great point. And obviously, you know, I think the compensation is a little bit different sometimes in the technical marketing side of the equation versus the sales side. Not saying that some technical marketing people aren't quoted, you know, like a sales engineer is, but, you know, there's typically that difference, you know, MBO versus a an OTE commission side of the equation. But, you know, I think, you know, having watched you in your career transition, you know, from being the technical marketing side to being a sales engineer in a very early organization and striving in it. And today, you obviously, you know, you sit as a global technology evangelist. You know, that's kind of the where a lot of the system engineers sit today, say, I'd love to become, you know, this technical evangelist. What's your take on that role? Is it still sales engineer, or is it sales engineer plus? What's your view of the world when you put your technical evangelist hat on? Is there any difference between the role, the job, the responsibilities, or is it still the same and just different title?
Yeah, you know, in my organization, chief technology evangelist, or whatever you want to refer to it, the job kind of cuts both ways. So I look at it as a systems engineer plus. So I have the regular daily job of making sure that any customers that I'm currently working with are still happy. POCs continue to run. POCs continue to get created and put into the channel. And as a chief technology evangelist, you sometimes have the nice advantage of being able to travel even more than you do with the normal systems engineer sales engineer role. You get to go to different organizations or different customers and talk about the technology, even though it may not necessarily be your account. And you also get to go to different events, such as big, you know, VMworld is a big one for all of us in this world, and other big trade shows like that. So you have the ability to get down there, talk to folks who you wouldn't necessarily be able to have that conversation with on a regular basis as a sales engineer. So that's where I really see the big line between the two.
What I like about your what you just said is the fact that it has a broader perspective. I've actually known evangelists that their sole responsibility is just doing roadmaps. And, you know, I guess there might be a niche for just doing roadmaps. You know, to me, it's more like, you know, I'm a jack of all trades. I wear multiple hats, right? You know, I want to be that designated batter or designated player in a sales campaign, you know, that maybe that sales team is not having a good chance of moving the ball forward or the opportunity forward, and then come in and as a designated batter comes in. So it's interesting to see your perspective, because I have seen other perspective where it's like, hey, evangelist means, oh, you know, I know everything on the roadmap only, right?
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. And there are a lot of folks who are just tied to keeping up with the roadmap, understanding what is coming down the pike from the product perspective, and being able to take feedback on the existing product and run it back into engineering to continue that roadmap going forward all the time. I think that's a great position to be in, but I really like what I've been able to, as we say, MacGyvered my career into today, is being able to be that kind of mishmash of a technical marketing guy when I need to be. So I do, throughout the quarters, different quarters, I do create technical marketing content like videos and white papers. But I also do all of the normal sales engineer type stuff. Have conversations with folks on the phone nowadays, not so much in person anymore. But I also have the ability to understand what is on the roadmap and take that information and feed it back into engineering. And as a good sales engineer, you should always be watching for that feedback and taking it back into engineering as well. That is part of your role in my position.
Yeah, it makes sense, Dave. You know, in terms of the evangelist side of the world, you know, one of the things I think you've done really well is communicate, you know, not only obviously at the technical level with the, you know, the product users, you know, but also often to build that vision, right? Selling upstream. I mean, how much of it is social selling, is responsibilities that fall on you in your current role? I mean, are you doing blog posts? Are you doing, you know, kind of the LinkedIn posting, the Twitter posting, all the kind of social selling side of it has to come with the equation?
Are you drinking like the juice from TikTok and going on a skateboard and You know, that's like the new thing now.
I'm not that fancy. My skateboarding days are over. Once you get past a certain age, you want to leave that behind, especially if you didn't do that when you were younger. But yeah, Dave, to your point, yeah, I do blog posts. I have a personal blog post or blog that I just started within the last year. And there's a difference between a corporate blog and a personal or professional blog, however you want to refer to it. And so, yeah, you'll find my name attached to different corporate postings that go up on LinkedIn for our company, as well as different blog posts. And I will curate internally to find other sales engineers or other folks in engineering to write a blog post to get that out on our website. So, you know, I really like what I do today. And it's, you know, it's something, if something were to come down the pike, it would have to kind of meet all of the things I get today. It's really fun to do what I do. And I'm going to say this and butcher this statement, but if you enjoy what you do, you've never worked a day in your life. And the way I look at it is, I don't feel like I'm working. I'm just having fun doing my job, and I'm making good money, and I'm making customers satisfied.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I always say, if you're not happy at your job, you know, change your perspective or change your attitude or latitude, right? Because
yeah,
life's too short not to have fun. So, you know, playing it forward, what's the career path ahead, right? I mean, obviously you're kind of at the pinnacle of what you're doing now, and some people are happy and content there, but did you have, you know, visions in advance? Where are you looking to go? You want to try to start your own company? What's the next chapter, you know, in this career path, if you're MacGyvering your way through it? Or is it just, you know, waiting to see what pops up and have to get the Swiss Army knife out and figure it out?
Yeah, you know, me starting a company, not on my career path. I have no desire to do that. There's a lot of responsibility that goes into that. And I really applaud folks and admire folks who have that ability and that drive to go do that sort of thing. That's not really my way of moving my career path forward. I really like doing the technical piece. You know, if you look at some of the larger companies, Microsoft, VMware, IBM, they all have this notion of a fellow, a technical fellow. I wouldn't say I'm a technical fellow. I'm close to one within my own organization, but in terms of what some of those folks have done in their careers, I don't really see myself measuring up to their level. But I really want to continue to do that when I'm doing today. And, you know, I'm going to take it like I've taken it all up to this point, is just see what comes down the road. The next thing that comes down the road, if it really jumps out at me, I'm going to jump at it and tackle it and MacGyver my way into turning it into something that my next employer, whoever that is, never thought that the job that they offered me could turn into that.
That's a great way to look at it. You know, I think, you know, sometimes the path determined is the path unknown, you know, and then the ultimate skill, I think, for anybody that works in sales engineering is problem solving. So if you know how to, solve a problem, you know, you'd never be out of a job, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, and the only thing that's constant in our jobs is change. And so if you can't, to your point, Dave, if you can't figure out how to solve problems in a fairly short time frame, you know, might be time to look for something else.
That's exactly right. Now, let me ask you this. Let me bring it back a little bit, because we were talking about your aspirations, the next step, right? Let's talk a little bit about technical market reference architecture documents, right? We see them all the time in different organizations and whatnot. Can you walk me through how does technical marketing develop such a thing? Is there, you know, and how do you even measure the success of a technical reference architecture white paper, right?
Yeah, you know, those types of documents are very unique. They're very different from general white papers that a technical marketing person would put out onto the website. Those typically come with a lot of back and forth with the engineering teams within companies. You've got to understand, you know, really where the roadmap is going, and understand what the technology, have a real deep understanding of what the technology does today in order to make sure you can put that into that document.
Is there a lot of MacGyvering when it comes to those papers? I mean, to your point, right? Like, sometimes I feel that when I've been expecting a, you know, I can tell you past experiences, right? I have a worked for a company where every sales engineer or every sales team would say, I need the reference architect, or I need the reference architect. Is there any MacGyver that happens in there with some futures or anything of that nature?
Yeah, I have not seen much in the way of futures in those reference architecture docs. It's really, you know, what works today, let's get it written down. Let's kind of, you know, if we can bring the guardrails in on the technology that we're selling, that helps reduce that helps increase time to market for our product. It helps improve the experience for the customer. And it also kind of could potentially reduce the amount of calls that come in from support, because someone's just saying, you know, you need a hard drive. Well, what kind of hard drive? Maybe need a spinning hard drive. Maybe need a solid state. Maybe need NVMe. There's all different kinds of things. And if you don't lay it out in those reference architectures, then you may be having customers who are MacGyvering your solution and finding out that it doesn't work. And next thing you know, you're on the phone as a sales engineer saying, no, that doesn't work. We never really said that it didn't work that way, but I can tell you for a fact that doesn't work that way. So that's where I really see that reference architectures are helpful for customers.
Well, and that's why I appreciate a lot of technical marketing folks, because it is very easy for a sales team to say how difficult could it be to actually have the reference architecture built or whatever. But there's a lot that goes into it, right? And it's more than just, you need to have that evangelist title to be able to look at the broader perspective. You know what? It's easier said than done is what I'm trying to get.
Oh, yeah. It's everything in, a lot of things, not everything, but a lot of things in our industry are not as easy as what people think. And there's a lot of, I think I've heard it on other previous episodes of your podcast where the answer is it depends, and customers hate that answer. But unfortunately, in order to write down all of the avenues or the paths to get to the final answer is never going to be achievable in a time frame that's needed to get the reference architecture out or the white paper. So you've got to write down the one or two best paths to get your product in front of the customer and get them to install it and purchase it. And if they ask questions during a sales call, say, it depends, and then explain all the different reasons and then have that back and forth. That's really what's fun about our job, is being able to interact with the customers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, I'd love just to get your kind of view of the world, right? You are one of those people that has always kind of been looking forward and kind of understanding what's happening in the industry and where the industry is going. What excites you? What's kind of on your radar? What technologies are, you know, you following, whether it's something you're working on today or something you want to work on? You know, if you were going to help paint the picture from an evangelist view of the world for our listeners that may be looking for where they should be skating to the puck for the future, you know, where you think they should be focusing? What excites you right now?
You know, I work for a company that does security for virtualized environments. We also do encryption. I really think that more and more companies need to start building security into their products, which is becoming more and more frequent today. But security technology and where it's going and how the market is kind of consolidating is what's really interesting to me. I also feel that quantum computing, even though I think it's still a good 10, maybe even 15 years off, maybe it'll go faster, I have no idea. But I think quantum computing, when that comes around, that is severely going to change the way all the encryption in the world works today, because you'll be able to solve encryption problems that take, you know, many years to solve. You'll be able to do them in seconds, minutes. It's still to be determined. And so I think quantum computing is really interesting, but unfortunately, you know, none of us on this call, except for very large companies, have the ability to play with any of that stuff. But I'm kind of watching where that goes, and seeing how that's going to affect the security world. And security is really a market that I've moved into and really like that technology now.
I agree. Yeah, post-quantum encryption, I think, is very interesting right now. That Yes, it won't be very long until, you know, it's going to kind of become the bearer standard. But it's always great. We just like try to get people's pulses, you know, people especially been in the industry for a long time, and you know, just help our audience kind of understand, you know, where the wave's coming, where the wave's going, you know, as people look for new careers or new skills to pick up. So yeah, thanks for sharing your insight there.
Yeah, I also think along those lines is AI, ML, however you want to refer to it. I think that's a big market as well. But I don't think that's going to be as big of a change as quantum will be when quantum actually hits the streets in a way that normal companies can pay for it and buy it.
Awesome. So what's in closing remarks, what's something that you can share with the audience that maybe aspiring to be an evangelist such as yourself? What are some of the things that you can actually recommend and advise to them?
Don't pigeonhole yourself. You can do whatever you want to do as long as you set your mind and just go do it. Have somewhat of a path. I never really had a path, so I'm kind of speaking out of turn here, but have a path on what it is that's interesting to you and learn that technology as best you can. And even though in your current job you may really like that, get very good at that and make sure that you communicate, and communicate yet again with whoever you're working with. You know, in our industry as a sales engineer, and actually when I was a young sysadmin, I thought the way to become knowledgeable and powerful within my job was to hoard the information. Yeah. And I think we've all learned that as you get older, the more information you hoard, the more your life becomes miserable because you are the go-to person for everything. It becomes difficult to take time off. It takes time, and to me, that's the biggest thing, is being able to take time off. And actually, it becomes very hard to move on to the next job as well.
Yeah, that's well said. That's great, great parting advice, Dave. And Dave, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and it's great to have you on the show, and really appreciate you, sharing your insight and obviously how you really take an unconventional career path and made a great career out of it. And I think it'll be it's a great episode for our audience to hear, because that way people understand, you know, doesn't have to be a straight line.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, and thanks a lot for having me on again, guys. This has been a blast.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, to my fellow chipsters, as you know, we always appreciate that you're listening to us. You can engage with us. If you want to engage with us, you can visit salesburrito.com. You can follow us on all the social media platforms at SalesBurrito. Until next time, Mr. Sales, you want to take us out?
Yeah. So keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.
My God, you got it. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye.
We hope you enjoy the Sales Burrito Show. Be sure to subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.